Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. Everyday Innovators, thank you so much for listening again and learning more about product management and innovation with me. If you're already involved in product innovation, you likely know about the website Innovation Excellence. It is the home of the global innovation community that provides connection and conversation among its nearly 30,000 readers. The site was co-founded by my guest, Braden Kelly. Braden is also a speaker and executive trainer, as well as an author with a growing list of innovation publications. Braden, thanks for joining me and the Everyday Innovators who are listening.
Well, thank you, Chad, for having me.
Delighted to be here. I'd like to start by getting a little background on Innovation Excellence. That's a site I discovered some time ago and found the blog post to be really informative. How did that come about?
Well, it started back in 2006 as my personal blog, and then the readership really started to grow over time, just using some of the simple things that I'd learned from doing online marketing for a site that eventually became part of HomeAway.com. Hmm. And so it started to take off, and it started to seem wasteful to only have my voice represented on the blog. So I started to invite other people in to share their thoughts and opinions about innovation on what was then blogging innovation. And it continued to grow and grow until finally it grew to the point where I decided it was prudent to invite in some external partners to help take it to the next level. And that was back in 2011 when I invited in Rowan Gibson, Julie Annixter, and Dean Tobias to create Innovation Excellence. So Innovation Excellence started in August of 2011 and has continued to grow. We have nearly 30,000 members in our LinkedIn group, and we receive over 100,000 unique visitors every month and serve up over 150,000 pages. If you believe Google Analytics, or if you look at our server, you know, it's much more than that.
That's a great audience. So, and good story. So it grew out of your personal efforts, and along the way you invited others to contribute, and now it is the place to go to for information about innovation.
Well, we do our best to make innovation insights accessible for the greater good and help accelerate people's innovation efforts.
Well, I would say you're being successful, because I know when I stumbled across it in my own pursuits of looking for an authoritative site online to look for information about innovation and specifically my space product innovation, that I was really pleased with what I found there. So appreciate you putting that together. And for everyone listening, check that out if you haven't already, innovationexcellence.com. I know one of the topics that you've written about in the past is innovation culture, and that's something I wanted to dive in further. I spend a good deal of time talking with organizations, and a lot of organizations are talking about this topic, right? The innovation is something that they recognize as important to them, and also recognize that they're not particularly good at, that it's not part of their culture. Why are organizations not getting better at innovation?
Well, I think that the trouble that organizations face with innovation is that there's, you know, a lot of different barriers that they can run into in making innovation a sustainable capacity of the organization, a repeatable capability of the organization. And that's really what my first book, Stoking Innovation Bonfire, was all about, was helping companies identify and remove barriers to innovation. And there's a lot of different barriers that people can run into, and probably the biggest is the mindset of innovation as a project. A lot of people stumble into innovation because they get into trouble in the marketplace and facing increasing competition and an accelerating pace of change. And they turn to innovation to try to bail them out. And they do so on a project basis. Maybe they fund a single Hail Mary attempt to try to save their company. And then if they're successful, then they'd like to do it again. But because they pursued it as a project and didn't take a structured approach to building a capability of the organization, then it's tough for them to do it again.
Yeah, I've seen that sort of thing happen a few times too, that if, when it's viewed as a project and it might be successful the first time, then it usually gets assigned to some group, you know, some function like marketing or maybe development, and more controls put around it, and maybe more aversion to risk incorporated. And you kind of kill off whatever was started there. Have you seen that sort of thing too, or different experience?
Yes. Yes. I think that because most companies' introduction to innovation is through the project mindset, then once you succeed with that project, then they're not sure quite what to do with it and quite how to do it again, or quite how to set up the environment for continuous innovation.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Let's dive into the innovation culture specifically. So what are the keys to building an innovation culture, to making this not just project-based, but something that is inherent to the organization?
Well, I think that the one of the major keys to remember is that innovation inflicts change on the organization. And so if you want to make innovation a sustainable capability of the organization, you need to increase the capacity and capability for change in the organization. The organization needs to get better at being able to change quickly and to absorb change faster within the organization, and to embrace change, and to understand that because the world is always changing around us, that we also have to change the world within. And so, you know, one of the first places to start is to start building up your change muscles, and then to inject into those muscles, you know, more of a shared understanding around what innovation is. And so the first step is to really sort of focus on the basics of culture change. And there's a lot of different models out there. A lot of people are fond of the John Cotter model, with the 8 steps of establishing a sense of urgency, creating a guiding coalition, developing a change vision, communicating the vision for buy-in, empowering broad-based action, generating short-term wins, never letting up, and then the 8th one is incorporating changes into the culture. But, you know, that's a good high-level model, but there's a lot of other great frameworks and interesting tools out there. And I'm currently working on a second book focusing on the best practices and next practices of organizational change, but it will also introduce a new change planning toolkit that I've developed that's designed from the ground up with the mindset of trying to get everyone literally on the same page for change. And so that's one of the most challenging things for people is really, you know, how do you organize your change efforts and how do you instill a greater change capability within the organization. And as you start to do that, you really start to lay a stronger foundation for sustainable innovation.
Okay. And you're working on that book, so it sounds like this is an opportunity for me to get you back and do a future interview with you so that we can dive into what you'll put together in that toolkit. You said the first step was this culture change, right? So there must be a framework here. How many steps are there involved in building an innovation culture?
Well, there's sort of 5 key steps, and focusing on the basics of culture change is the first step. The second is to build a common language of innovation. The third is to go ahead then and create a connected organization. And then 4 and 5 are to find out who gives a bleep, you know, who's really passionate about innovation and really wants to make it happen. And then the 5th is probably the most important, and that's the fact that innovation is a team sport.
Okay, so let's run through these a bit. So you already talked about the basics of culture change a bit. Are we ready for the second step?
Sure.
Okay, and you said that was building a common language of innovation. What's involved in that?
Well, I think if you were to get 20 different people or 50 different people in a room and ask them what the definition of innovation was in any organization, maybe 1 out of 100 organizations, maybe 2 or 3, you might get most of the people saying the same definition because they've created a company-wide definition for innovation and everybody knows what it is. But in most organizations, and in most groups of people, when you collect them together and you start asking them how they define innovation, you know, if there's 20 people, you'll get 20 different definitions. And that's going to make it very difficult to innovate successfully because you have different people pulling in different directions trying to achieve what they think innovation is. And so the first step is to define what innovation means for the organization. And of course, I have my own definition, and, mm-hmm. and the way that I like to define definition is that innovation transforms the useful seeds of invention into widely adopted solutions valued above every existing alternative. And there's a couple key elements to that definition. One is the difference between invention and innovation. Another is the difference between useful and valuable. And the final key to the hidden within that definition is the fact that value is crucial to innovation. And, and I identify three sources of value in my value innovation framework. But we won't go into that today, probably. and so the first place to start is to define what innovation means. And then you want to build a vision, strategy, and goals for innovation in much the same way that you build a vision, strategy, and goals for your organization. And ideally, you'd like to have some intersection points between the innovation vision, the innovation strategy and innovation goals with your corporate vision, strategy, and goals.
Yeah, we expect to see some alignment there between those, right? That the innovation strategy is supporting the business strategy.
Yes, and then the final element of building a common language for innovation is to start to think through what kind of infrastructure you want to have in place to support a sustainable innovation capability, and then to make sure that that's widely understood and implemented as well. And so a lot of different organizations that have gone down this path, you know, whether it's Whirlpool or Intuit or others, have built an infrastructure to support innovation because, you know, getting ideas is the easy part. It's scaling them that's much harder. And if you don't have an infrastructure in place to support the scaling of the best ideas that are backed by truly differentiated and unique customer insight, then you'll never get to the end goal, which is to achieve innovation. You might end up with interesting ideas, or you might get part of the way down the path and come up with some useful inventions, but never make it all the way to the end and truly launch some valuable innovations into the marketplace.
So lots of things going on there that we could no doubt dig into and spend a lot more time that we don't have actually, right? But some key things I want to pull out real quick. Your definition of innovation, you made the distinction of offering value above alternatives. I think that's an important thing to remember, that if we're going to develop a new product, if it's just like everything else, these me too products that are on parity, we're not really offering new value to the customers. And above the alternatives really calls out that focus on value. And I really appreciate the emphasis on value there. The need for
also highlights the fact that you have to replace something. And I think too often people come up with an interesting idea and turn it into a useful invention, and they think that they don't have any competition or anything to displace. But the truth is, that, and we may not want to admit it, that there's always something to displace.
Right.
Because even if there's not a product in the market or a service in the market, there's always the do-nothing solution.
Exactly.
And people always have the choice to continue to do nothing as their solution.
Yep, absolutely. And the alignment with the business strategy was an important element. And this is being driven through customer insights. You highlighted that also, that we're getting the ideas through customer involvement and insights from them.
Yes, that's crucial. If your idea isn't grounded in a unique and differentiated customer insight, then it's not going to lead to a unique and differentiated product or service that is going to deliver that value over and above every existing alternative.
Exactly. But when it comes to infrastructure, what have you seen in terms of organizations really trying to make innovation part of the culture as a whole, so innovation is spread out across the organization, versus creating an infrastructure that is centered in one group that is somehow responsible for innovation for the organization?
Well, I think that the organizations that do it well create the definition, they create the vision, strategy, and goals centrally, they define a methodology for innovation that will be useful in much the same way you define a methodology for product management or project management or other business disciplines. And then they tend to have a small core team whose main responsibility is to help spread the love or spread the religion and make tools available to people to help them be more successful in innovation and to do so in a common way across the organization. But then also they tend to set up the training and the finance and the metrics and other things to support the innovation efforts and the scaling of insight-driven ideas.
Okay. So centralize the initial development of what innovation means to the organization and then infuse that across the organization.
Yes. And so, you know, for example, Whirlpool has their iTeam spread across the organization, and they have, you know, hundreds of iMentors spread throughout the organization. Intuit has a program focused on design thinking, where they train people and place those people throughout the organization and use those people as resources to help as advisors on various innovation efforts. And then figuring out how to get people's time involved in innovation efforts is another great challenge that people struggle with, and that's key to success. And there's some interesting approaches to how to solve that problem.
Okay. And this sounds like it might be leading into the third step you mentioned, which was creating a connected organization. So what does that really mean, and how does that come about?
Well, I think that where it starts is the genesis of an idea that when you look at a person coming into the organization, every individual has a set of, you know, skills, abilities, and talents that they bring to the organization. And the only reason they come to the organization is because there's some intersection with a job description or a set of job requirements. If there was no intersection, then they wouldn't get hired to do that job. But because there's an intersection, they get hired and they come in to do that job. But in most cases, if you think of a Venn diagram, there's only a certain amount of intersection between the job requirements and the talent, skills, and abilities of the individual coming in to do that job. And so in the lesser run organizations, those extra talent, skills, and abilities go to waste. But in the organization of the future, people will have to think about how to design their organization such that overhang that usually gets wasted is engaged for the positive benefit of the organization. And for that to happen, that requires greater connection within the organization, where those talent, skills, and abilities that aren't being utilized in the person's main job have an outlet within the organization to achieve extra positive benefit for the organization in another way. And it can be extended as well, because if you start to think about the people, there's also people outside the organization, whether it's partners or suppliers or customers even, that have their own talent, skills, and abilities. And sometimes those also intersect with the job requirements for a particular job. And so the idea behind creating a connected organization is that there's all of these talents, skills, and abilities in the world and within our organizations, and you want to try to figure out how to connect people and to connect those talent, skills, and abilities to the work that you're trying to get done and the positive benefit you're trying to make for the world through the efforts of your organization. And so, you know, Cisco has an interesting program where it's an internal internship program where people around the organization create projects that people can come in and provide discrete help with. And so I might be working in marketing, but I'm really interested in finance, and finance is actually my passion, but I just happened to do a marketing job for somebody one time, and that became my career. So I can go and do an internship in the finance department and help to achieve positive business benefit for the finance department within the context of my employment with Cisco. So I do my day job for marketing, but a certain amount of my time is spent working in the finance department, and it's figured out, you know, how that allocation of time works, but it's part of my career development program. Hmm. And maybe over time I become a finance person, but I started out as a marketing person. But now I have an outlet to try to bring more talent, skills, and abilities to bear to help the organization. That's just one example.
So to me, this sounds a lot like that issue of the square pegs in the round hole, right? That all of us somehow fit the roles that we were hired in for, but we also have other skills and other talents, that overhang that you talked about. And so some kind of formal mechanism like the Cisco example to let you take advantage of those skills and see where you can align them with the organization. Is this also like what was accomplished when Google had their 20% free time sort of program that you could work on a project of your choice 20% of the time?
Kind of. I mean, it's too bad that they ended that, but and the myth lives on. But
right,
it's funny how that happens. I still hear people stand up and do keynotes when I'm speaking at conferences, and still using Google's 20% time as an example, even though they don't do it anymore.
Right.
But Intuit does an interesting thing, and I haven't checked back in with them recently to make sure they're still doing it. But they did a percent time where you sort of requested it, you as you know, almost like a vacation where you can use a certain percentage of your time, but you save it up and then you basically schedule it with your manager, and then you disappear for a week or two, usually with colleagues, to attack some innovation idea that you have. So it's not everybody doing percent time all the time, mm-hmm. Which you know at Google turned out to be you know in your free time, but it's really sort of setting up what I like to call an innovation vacation, although if you're still working, it's not a true vacation. But you're doing so in a way that it's easier for the manager to cope with the loss from the day-to-day work. And it's possible for HR potentially then to staff appropriately for people to be away from their regular work for a certain period of time to work on a project to develop an innovation idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the real challenge, because I'm sure there's managers listening right now also thinking, well, you know, I have tasks that have to get done. We have an operation that is continuing. We can't just ignore what's already going in place, right? The train is headed down the tracks.
Right.
And at the same time, how do you take advantage of those people who have additional skills that can be beneficial to the organization's objectives? And give them the opportunity to grow in those areas also.
Yes, and so that's really the gauntlet being thrown down to the HR organization, and I'll go ahead and throw it down, is that HR needs to take this as a challenge of identifying how the organization can find time for innovation and take the active leadership role to help the organization's staff to cope with things like innovation and things like career development through that skills, talents, and abilities overhang that, mm-hmm. you know, in the end will deliver more positive financial return for a public company and more, trying to think of it, the charitable benefits for organizations that are in a charitable practice.
And some people seem to be more inherently wired this way. You know, like I tend to be the restless soul who will do, you know, fulfill the responsibilities I have, but I'm also always looking around to see where I can add additional value. And some people in the organization do tend to be those that are maybe more, I don't know if innovative is the right kind of way to think about this, but those that do want to apply their overhang, as you described it, to other areas where it makes sense. And the fourth step you talked about was identifying the people in the organization who give a beep, who really care about innovation, right?
Yes, because some people are very comfortable in the status quo, and some people are very good at executing in day-to-day responsibility type roles, operational roles, and other people are, like you mentioned, restless souls that are constantly looking to change things for the better. And so one of the ways to help create an innovative culture is to identify those restless souls that are looking to continuously create positive improvement for the company or for the customers, hopefully for the customers more than the company, because that will benefit the company indirectly. And, you know, harness them and you know, give them the opportunity and the tools and the time and whatever they need to help prototype and experiment and get things started that can eventually be taken over by the people that are more comfortable operating and scaling things, because people are very rarely good at both. We need both skills and capabilities within the organizations, but some people are really good at developing ideas and potential products and services, and other people are better at taking those and scaling them and mm-hmm. taking them around the globe and to as many customers as possible.
Now, it does seem like our existing management systems are much better at dealing with one of the type of those people than the other type. That our existing approaches to management often don't do so well with that person that wants to, you know, exceed what they're currently responsible for and tends to think more innovatively. And does this go back then to your charge to HR to push on the management systems to change this?
Yes, and it also goes back to the overhang. And so that overhang in a lot of organizations, when it goes to waste, it doesn't necessarily go to waste completely. It just goes other places. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all these great startups that we end up with usually are the result of an overhang that was wasted within an organization. So the overhang wasn't respected by the organization, and so the overhang turned into a new company that the original organization gets no financial benefit from.
Right.
So, and at the same time, as we talk about building a culture of innovation, there's a framework that originally Gary Hamel started, and I kind of added to, I turned it into the innovator's framework within my book, Stoking Your Innovation Bonfire. And it starts with obedience at the bottom, and then diligence, intellect, initiative, creativity, passion, and innovation, and, you know, at the top of the tree, so to speak, or the top of the pyramid, working your way up. And the part that I added to is what you need to achieve that particular level of employee engagement. And, you know, you pretty much get obedience, diligence, and intellect by paying people a salary. But to get to those higher levels of employee engagement, initiative, creativity, passion, and ultimately innovation, mm-hmm. there's a lot of other things the organization needs to do to unlock those. To unlock people's initiative, you need to give them respect. To unlock their creativity, you need to make people have trust within the organization. To unlock people's passion, you have to provide a sense of fun and purpose within the organization. And to get to innovation, you really have to provide the insights and flexibility, and we've kind of talked about both of those already, in order for innovation to be unlocked within the organization.
Very good. And for listeners unfamiliar with Gary Hamel, he is a leading management philosopher, really talking about what management will be in the future, of organizations, and makes a strong case for how management is the number one innovation of the last 150 years. And without management, we really would not have made any of the other accomplishments that we did make. And very interesting person to also learn from. As you're talking about these people that kind of stand out, the in my words, the square peg in the round hole, Abby Griffin, who was the person that gave us the voice of the customer terminology way back when, she led a book, Serial Innovator. Have you come across that one before?
No, I haven't.
It does a good job of talking about that person that does stand out in the organization and how do you try to manage them, and has a good story of a gentleman at P&G that stood out and ended up doing great things there, but along the way, you know, was fired at least once because of this problem that you are not doing what you're supposed to be doing, quote unquote. So, let's move on then. I think we're probably up to the fifth key. Did you call that a team sport?
Yes. The myth of the individual innovator should be killed. So, you know, people love to talk about Thomas Edison or Alexander Graham Bell or Bill Gates or even Steve Jobs. You know, none of those people are this mythical lone innovator. There's no such thing as a lone innovator. Innovation is a team sport. And if you look at Alexander Graham Bell and Thomas Edison, they had whole labs full of people mm-hmm. behind them. And if we look at Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, you know, whole organizations full of people making things happen. So innovation is a team sport. And the key is to that there's a lot of different roles to be played in successful innovation. And that's why I created the 9 innovation roles. And so there's a number of different roles that come together to make innovation successful. And then the key is to understand which roles you tend towards and which roles the other people on your team tend towards. To identify which are missing and how you plan to fill those vacancies, whether it's through asking people to step into roles that they may not be their strong suit, or by inviting in others from outside. But the 9 innovation roles are the revolutionary, the conscript, the connector, the artist, the customer champion, the troubleshooter, the judge, the magic maker, and the evangelist. And just real quickly, the revolutionary is the noisy ideas person that is always trying to change things. And if you have an idea management system, probably 80 to 90% of the ideas in there are from your revolutionaries. Then we have the connector, which is the most self-explanatory of them. And that, those are the people that know where the resources are in the organization and the people that know what you may need to know. And how to connect those to your innovation project. And then we have the artists, people that may not come up with a lot of ideas, but are really good at helping to make them better. The customer champion, these might be people that live at the edge of the organization and are really, you know, if you don't have a customer in the room, maybe the best proxy to doing so. Then we have the troubleshooter. These are people that love difficult problems and can help you fight through some of the big obstacles you find in achieving your successful implementation of your invention into innovation. And hopefully they can also find and fix the fatal flaw that every idea has. Then we have the judge, people that are really good at stepping outside of themselves and looking at things objectively and helping to identify the most logical and opportunistic ideas for you to develop. And then there's 8 is the magic maker. These are people that are good at figuring out how to take your idea and make it real. And then 9 is the evangelist. And these are people that are really good at the value translation component of my value innovation framework. And then that's really, you know, helping people understand how the potential innovation fits into their lives. But then also how to help sell it internally. So those are the 9 innovation roles quickly defined. And they all need to come together at various points to push the idea forward from insight to innovation through the invention phase and into the commercialization phase. But it's not a lone activity. There's no lone innovator. So we all need to pull together to make innovation happen.
I want to be the magic maker just because I love how that title sounds. I make magic. That's awesome. But a really good point that it takes takes a team here, a group of people doing different things to make innovation happen. And all these roles, these inherently happen. This occurs just in an organization. If you have some sort of critical mass, enough people involved, these roles are there, right? Isn't the real problem just harnessing them and getting them to move in the same direction?
Well, what you'll find in most cases is that as you evaluate your team, there'll be some that are weak or missing. Missing is the worst case, of course. But if you evaluate your team, and it's a good idea to do so, by identifying where you're weak or where you have roles missing, then you can take the opportunity to identify your solution to that really a problem.
And make sure you have the right people doing the right things at the right time.
Yes, and that you have the right roles represented at the right time.
Okay, and I think a key point of that is the specific roles are important, but this overall notion that innovation is a team sport, that it is not up to the single brilliant, most creative person in the organization to innovate, but it is up to this group of people, these roles performing different functions that actually makes innovation happen.
Yes, and we talked about a couple of key things earlier that relate here. One is the idea that, you know, there's a difference between scaling and inventing, and then there's also you know, just a very great difference in people and what they're good at and the amount of change that a true innovation is going to inflict on the organization. I mean, if you look at something like the iPod, when Apple decided to launch that, you know, they weren't making consumer devices. They didn't have retail stores to give people an experience, to experience a product like the iPod that big box stores were doing a bad job of telling people about. They didn't have knowledge of the music industry. They didn't, you know, have so many things that they had to go out and acquire and integrate into their organization for the iPod to become an eventual success. And it wasn't an overnight success. You know, it took 3 years for the iPod to truly take off, and it took a Windows version of iTunes coming out for it truly to take off.
Yeah. good example. And it was that collection of capabilities that came together. And as you said, you know, iTunes was a key piece of that too, to make it easy to get music and onto the device. So to summarize, we went through five keys or five steps here. The culture change that has to take place, building that common language of innovation to understand what innovation really means inside the organization and the elements of its innovation vision, strategy, and the goals. Creating a connected organization, and identifying those people who care most about innovation. And between those two things, I got the sense of, you know, making sure we're using that overhang of people's skills and talents wisely. And then finally, making innovation a team sport. So the five keys involved in building an innovation culture.
And there is a white paper on this that's available for download on bradenkelly.com in the thought leadership area.
Great. And in the show notes, I'll put a link to that to make it easy for people to find also. This kind of brings us to the where I like to wrap up our interviews, which is to tie things together with an innovation or success quote that you love and why you chose that. So what is one you have that you can share with us?
Well, I'd like to share two.
Two would be fine.
I occasionally create some of my own, so I'll share one of those and then another from Sir Ken Robinson. So one of the quotes that I created over the past few months that I thought was interesting and worthy of sharing, and I hope that people find it interesting and useful, is that sometimes we focus on the door that is just closed and miss the door that just opened. So that's my quote, and I think that it's important because it's so easy, especially in the space of innovation where failure is everywhere, to get caught up in the fact that, you know, a project has been killed or the customers didn't like it or whatever the case may be. And also in that moment, many, many times, there's something that we can learn that will lead to something even better. And if we're so caught up in feeling disappointed or dejected about something that just failed, we'll miss the opportunity to learn and to see something that the same people that are telling us no will lead us to a yes somewhere else. And so that's one that I'd like to leave people with, which is that sometimes we focus on the door that is just closed and miss the door that just opened.
Yeah, Braden, I appreciate you sharing that one because I think it's very important for anyone in life, actually, and especially for innovators, that when we face a failure, something that didn't work the way we expected, that's an incredible learning experience. And one of my favorite proverbs is, it's a Chinese proverb, is, you know, fall down seven times, get up eight. And it's that notion of, hey, something that worked the way you wanted, learn from that and keep moving. So, and your quote captures that really well. And you had another one for us.
Yes, the other one is from Sir Ken Robinson, who's a big proponent of educational change. And his quote is, "The question is not how intelligent you are, but how are you intelligent?" And the quote here, the reason I like this quote is the fact that it captures the fact that everybody is intelligent in their own way. Everybody has something to offer. The key is to try to figure out what that is, what everybody's really good at, and harness that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sir Robinson speaks often on education, and he has these wonderful twists. And I haven't heard this quote before, and I appreciate you sharing that the key is, how are you intelligent? It's not the most innovative person is not necessarily the most intelligent. It might be the person that just pays attention to things in a different way than others do.
Yes, usually it's somebody that identifies a connection that the expert missed.
Very good. Thanks for sharing those with us. And just to wrap up, what's one key thing you want to leave listeners with that might be thinking more about, how do I really create this innovation culture? And also, of course, how can people follow the work that you're doing now?
Okay. Well, on the first one, what I would say is that if you are wanting to create an innovation culture and move beyond a project mentality within your organization, the first thing you have to do is commit. And the reason that most organizations fail to create an innovation culture is they don't commit to it. It's not something that you say, it's something that you do, and it's something that you do over an extended period of time, really something that you don't stop doing. So unless you're willing to start doing something that you're not ever going to stop doing, then don't start. And then how people can continue to keep up with what I'm up to is they can go to bradenkelly.com. That's my website. They can follow me on Twitter, where I tweet as @innovate. They can follow me on LinkedIn as well, which is linkedin.com/in/BradenKelly. So there's lots of different ways to follow me. I am working on a new book on the best practices and next practices of organizational change, and that's the area that I'm most focused on now, because innovation is really all about change. And so I want to introduce some new methods to make it easier for people to cope with the accelerating pace of change. And so that will be captured in my change planning toolkit and also in the book that I'm writing for Palgrave Macmillan that will be released in January 2016.
Very good. So would I be able to follow up with you in January and we'll talk about what you've learned in putting that book together?
That would be great. I'd love to share it with your audience.
Great. And I got the commitment on the recording. So we're set. Braden, really appreciate your time. Thanks for walking through, talking about innovation culture and how you put innovation culture in place. And once again, Everyday Innovators, thank you for listening to this. If you are finding value in this, please help other innovators discover this also. The best way to do that is to go to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast. That just makes it easier for others to find this as they search based on how iTunes tends to rank things. And also, if you want to connect with me, theeverydayinnovator.com is a good place to do that. Braden, again, thanks for your time and sharing all your experience in innovation and innovation culture.
Well, thank you, Chad, for having me.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.